Being is in part going to be a test. Can you all hear this in the back room? Okay, try again. That was perfect. Could not have planned that better. So tonight, this will be in part a test, so we do appreciate the audience and Public Works Advisory Board members for hanging in there with us. There might be echoes, there might be some delays, some equipment may malfunction. You will see guys dressed in all black walking around. Generally, that's what AV guys wear on the job. And just know that as you're talking into the mic, it'll automatically pick it up, and when you stop talking, it turns off. So I want to thank Bill Gaines Audio and AGP also for assisting with this upgrade. It's a major upgrade. All of the components are new, and we look forward to seeing how it goes. And I'll give it back to you, Chair.
Thank you, Director. First off, do any of the PWAB members have any announcements? That was your only announcement that you had?
Yeah, I'll just add, if you could speak about 4 to 6 inches away from the mic, you could pull it closer towards you, because it sounds like sometimes it's not picking up your voice.
Okay. How's that? Is that better?
Yes.
So that brings us to public comment. If there are any members of the public that wish to speak at this time, matters that are not on the agenda, please do so. AGP, are there any people in the queue?
I apologize. I should have also said no Zoom tonight. We are on channel 20 and on slow span, but no Zoom for tonight.
So would that preclude any?
Yes.
Public comment? Okay. Okay. That brings us to the consent agenda. I believe there are two items. First is my request for a absence on September 17th, the next meeting. We can probably forego and just vote on both of these items.
So you'd offer one public comment option for the consent agenda, or you? So
it should be on your screen.
Yes. Yeah, do any of the board members wish to pull an item? And we can forego the public comment at this point because we're not doing that.
You have to request public comment.
Okay, so if there are anybody in the audience that wish to speak to the consent agenda, please do so. Here's not. With that, we'll close public comment. Can I have a motion to approve item 6A and 6B?
Yeah, I move to approve consent item 6A and 6B.
I'll second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That's all in favor. Moving on to business items. Director Qualick, do you have a presentation for this?
We do, and this is the only business item tonight. It is our fiscal year 25, quarter four, water reclamation facility program quarterly reports. And I've asked Confluence Engineering not to summarize the report itself, but to just give an update on the recycled water project. But we're available for questions either on the report or on the presentation. And I'll kick it over to Dan.
Thanks, Greg. Can members of the PWAB hear me?
Yes.
Great. All right. How do we cue the presentation? Do I need to go into presentation mode? No. I'll try that while we're working on that. Thanks for this opportunity to present the fourth quarter PWAB quarterly report for fiscal year 2025. This quarterly report covers activities from April 1st to June 30th of 2025. But as Greg described, we're also going to talk about some of the ongoing project activities that have occurred after June 30th, just as a way of providing an update to the PWAB on the recycled water program. So just briefly, we've got some of the financials from the quarterly report. I won't go through in these too much detail, cover the activities briefly, but during the quarter that we're presenting on, the city staff met with Coastal Commission. The city staff performed a pressure test on the IPR and abandoned desal pipelines that will be utilized to convey recycled water with positive results. So those pipelines can be utilized, confirming those pipelines can be utilized for the project. Performed a back flushing test on injection well number one, or the pilot injection well, to allow us to compare pump back flush versus airlift back flush for the benefit of informing the design of the injection well equipping. Met with the Division of Drinking Water to discuss backflow requirements at the Advanced Water Treatment Facility. Project biologists completed necessary biological surveys of the lagoon, did confirm the presence of a southwestern pond turtle, and is coordinating with the EPA with respect to the biological opinion. And then in June, City Council approved several recycled water items that previously went to the PWAB for consideration, and so with PWAB comments, City Council approved consultant contracts to support additional program management services, archaeological testing services, and hydrogeologic services for phases 3, which is recycled water, and phase 4, which is wastewater treatment plant decommissioning of the work program. City Council also certified the EIR addendum number 2 and the notice of determination. The approved the new recycled water implementation strategy and received and filed the final conceptual design report for the recycled water facility. So that includes the recycled water pipelines and injection well equipment. So all those items came to PWAB in May. We have a slide here, it's just the funding and financing portfolio for the WARF program. I'll skip over that just in case there's any questions. And then what we have here is the updated recycled water program schedule. This schedule reflects the updated implementation strategy that was presented to PWAB and the City Council in May and June of quarter 4, 2025. As you can see, well, if you recall, this schedule extends out the timeline for the program because it incorporates a more incremental approach to implementing the recycled water program, which we discussed at those previous meetings. That approach includes drilling of two additional injection wells and then testing of those wells with an injection test tracer study similar to what was completed at injection well number one prior to equipping those wells and constructing the pipelines to deliver recycled water to those wells. So it's a risk mitigation strategy that the city staff and the recycled water team thought was appropriate for the implementation of this program and received council approval to move forward in June. And then just a quick update on some of the ongoing activities since the end of the quarter four. The city submitted the report of waste discharge application to the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. That's one of the key permitting documents for obtaining the groundwater recharge and recovery permit, which is the primary permit necessary for the recycled water program. Additionally, in August, and actually currently ongoing, the city is working on completing the phase three archaeological testing investigations that were part of the package that was presented to PLAB and council. The archaeological investigations for phase four at the old wastewater treatment plant have been delayed due to ongoing negotiations with Cayucas. And then the current schedule is to release what the design team is working on is the construction bid documents for those two additional wells that I mentioned earlier. And then the city is continuing to work with the Bureau of Reclamation on the NEPA EA document that it submitted back in March. On the next slide, we've just got a couple of photos of some of the recent site work that is being completed for the archaeological testing. This is testing for potential archaeological resources for the pipeline alignment that goes under Willow Camp Creek, which was part of the recommendation from the conceptual design report. With this testing and assuming negative results for archaeological resources, then the city will be cleared after some administrative approvals. It's got to send a letter to the EPA, then sends a letter to SHPO to proceed with the construction of that segment of pipeline. And here's just a map showing roughly where that testing is occurring. There near the intersection or confluence of Willow Camp Creek and Morrow Creek, or probably more recognizable as the east of the fisherman storage area off Embarcadero Road, just south of Morrow Creek. And then just some ongoing activities that the Recycled Water Program team is continuing to work on is additional hydrogeology model runs, evaluating injection rates and travel times, updates to the basis of design report as new information from geophysics surveys and other things have been made available, additional biologic surveys in coordination with the funding and financing and resource agencies, and then continued collaboration with Coastal Commission for compliance with the special conditions of the coastal development permit. If you tuned in to the city council meeting last Tuesday, there was an item where the city is looking to partner with the Resource Conservation District on a potential Choro levee modification project on a city-owned property to help reduce flooding in the Choro Valley, which will have benefits to agriculture and other Choro Valley residents, and help the city comply with the ag mitigation requirement of the coastal development permit. So that concludes my presentation on the Q4 PWAB Work Program Quarterly Report.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah, on the biological study at Morrow Creek Lagoon, why are we doing that there?
The alignment that was included in the EIR Addendum 2 includes a crossing of Morrow Creek near the, what we call it, the Western Pedestrian Bridge. To convey recycled water to potential future injection well locations of IW7 and IW8. And so that was what was triggering the environmental studies. I would note that the proposed method for conveying recycled water across Morrow Creek is to reutilize the abandoned desal feed line, which would avoid any impacts to the creek and or biological resources in that area.
In your in the quarterly report, it mentions the NEPA document will be out for review in 2025. Do you know when? It's coming to a close pretty soon.
Yeah. So that's something that's unfortunately a little bit out of the city's control. As mentioned, the city submitted that NEPA document to the Bureau of Reclamation in March, but unfortunately they've had some staffing changes at the Bureau, and so it's a whole new environmental team, is my understanding, that has taken over. So the environmental team that we had been in contact with prior to that is no longer there, and so we've had to wait for the new environmental team to be identified and then to have them take up review of the city's document. And so that team has been identified, and actually we're waiting for some feedback from them hopefully in the next week or two. So it seems like things are moving again, but unfortunately it has been delayed. The review of the NEPA by the Bureau has been delayed due to some federal staffing issues.
So will our advisory board be seeing that document when it comes out?
Yeah, so it'll get publicly released, once the Bureau has perform their internal review and is ready to make it publicly available.
Also mentioned in the basis of design report about the draft Title 22 engineering report will be updated as more hydrological data becomes available. Last meeting, I think we talked about doing more tracer tests. Have they been doing tracer tests? Is that what we mean by hydrologic data?
Yeah, so we're probably referencing a couple of things. The most recent hydrogeologic analyses that have been done have been the geophysics surveys, and I think we talked about those at the last meeting. The city's hydrogeology team completed two geophysics surveys, an HVSR and an ERT survey to get information to help us better understand the lithology or the aquifer properties in and around the project area. And so those surveys and that information has been really helpful and informative for the program implementation. So that's one example of the additional hydrogeologic surveys. You also referenced some tracer studies. No additional tracer studies have been done since the termination of the tracer study that we've talked about previously in March, but it is envisioned that in 2026 that as part of the new implementation strategy that additional tracer studies will be done, and so information gained from those studies could be used to inform and update the basis of design report.
In your project schedule, you show that the well drilling bid documents will go out I guess at the end of the year. What percent complete are those right now?
So we talked with the engineering and the hydrogeo design teams this week. I don't have an exact percentage estimate, but they are well along the way towards finalizing those documents. They've got the technical specs written for the well drilling. I think they've got the front ends largely developed. One of the final things is just finalizing the specific locations for the wells. It's really become the critical path. But once those get finalized with the property owners, then we should be able to compile the rest of all of that previously prepared information and get those bid documents out in very short time.
Will our advisory board see those documents before they go out to bid?
I would defer to Public Works staff on that. Yeah, it sounds like, yeah, if there's time available, which there should be, one approach potentially, and I'd like to talk to Damaris and Greg about this, would be bring, the largely complete draft with the specs and the tech specs and other things with the, acknowledgement that there may be some final changes before they get released, but that could be something that could come to PWEB.
Also in that summary, it talks about then the drilling construction will take an entire year, it looks like.
Yeah, that's probably a little misleading the way that's shown. The actual drilling is not going to take that long. It's the tracer study that is envisioned to include the drilling contractor support is going to take a full year. So the drilling, like we saw with injection well number one, with mobilizations and setup and drilling the pilot hole and then finalizing the well design based off of lithology and the cuttings and then ordering the materials and then constructing the drilling the, you know, the full size hole and then construction of the well and then well and then development of the well probably takes on the order of 1 to 2 months. But then it's envisioned that we would have the drilling contractor as part of their contract available to support the injection test, because there are certain activities associated with the injection test, back flushing, potentially, you know, if you needed to pull any of the downhole equipment, that it's just, it's helpful to have them on there. And so that's why we've kind of lumped that all into the well construction line item, drilling and construction, but the large portion of that timeline really is associated with that subsequent injection test.
At the bottom of your schedule, you have final completion of what? You mentioned
like,
twice.
Like we're testing new AV in the room, I'm testing a new computer today because okay. My old one crapped out on me this morning. So
that's at the point where we're ready to put water in the ground and that's that? Or what is final completion? We're actually delivering recycled water to the customers.
Yeah, great question. So that the substantial completion, you know, was shown at the end of calendar year 2027, that's when recycled water would start going into the ground. And then we have the tracer study, or what's officially known as the operational tracer study and the permitting documents, that then starts to demonstrate to the Division of Drinking Water that the travel time is sufficient, you know, and we intend, you know, the program team intends to know well in advance of that. That's why we're doing this interim tracer study, not waiting till the end to do the final operational tracer study. But recycled water would be going into the ground in early 2028 and then starting to come out of the ground, you know, a minimum of 2 months, you know, hopefully more like 4 to 6 months later, and then would be could be available for delivery to city customers. So final completion would be after recycled water has been injected and then determined to meet sufficient travel time, and then all of the checklist items, you know, for the final recycled water facilities construction have been completed. But in theory, the waters could be being delivered at or before the final completion.
So this may be a tricky question, but how will we know we're actually getting that reclaimed water coming out of our faucets at home that is actually being delivered to our homes?
Well, I think the recycled water. That is an interesting question. I mean, there are certain intrinsic water quality differences between the advanced purified water and the state water or native, you know, more groundwater. I think as I think we've talked about, the quality, specifically the hardness, but really the overall quality is, you know, very high from advanced purified water. It's gone through multiple treatment steps, including reverse osmosis and, you know, ultraviolet advanced purification. And so, you know, there could be a taste difference, largely, you know, a positive taste difference. So you might also notice it in the hardness of the water. But those would probably be your primary indicators.
And how will we go about quantifying that we've met the goal of 412.5 acre feet a year when it's being delivered? How do we quantify it at the home faucets?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of ways. We've talked to city staff. I mean, I think the easiest way would be to quantify injection of 412.5 acre feet per year and extraction of an equivalent volume of water. Now, it's going to be, obviously, as you inject the water, it's going to disperse, it's going to mix with native groundwater, so molecule by molecule. But, you know, conceptually, by injecting that water, the city has a greater ability to extract water, and that's the benefit that the city's really receiving. And so I guess I would interpret it as, you know, injecting and extracting 412.5 acre feet of water from the Morro Basin, you know, would meet that requirement.
Will this occur throughout the entire year or just in periods of the year that you'll be delivering recycled water?
I mean, I think that's really an operational question. You know, to hit that 412 and a half target, you're going to have to be operating, you know, a good majority of the year. But then once that's met, how does the city want to operate the system? I'll let Demare speak to that.
Correct. So after that has been met, then it's up to the city to want operational needs. So water, we can use, have to use it all the time. It would just, you know, water levels and drought and, you know, need for it.
Since there's, as it goes through the different processes, there's losses each time. You get so much concentrate that you can actually deliver. How much is needed to be delivered at the plant in effluent to be able to achieve the end results of 412.5 in the delivery? You have to have a certain amount of effluent continuing to the plant, taking out the losses so that you can get to that 412.
Yeah, so I mean, just rough numbers, you lose approximately 20% through the RO process. So 412 and a half times 1.2 would give you your rough sort of influent number. The program team has modeled inflows to the plant, looking at seasonal and diurnal flows and treatment capacity and storage availability to, you know, demonstrate that, yeah, that there is enough flow coming to the plant currently with the treatment capacity to meet 412 and a half. But there's not enough to meet the 850, you know, and that is one of the reasons that the Recycled Water Program team has been communicating consistently over the last several years with the funding agencies that, you know, there's not even the wastewater available to meet that number, and that's more of a target at build out, and, you know, the funding and financing agencies agreed to that, and that's where we've landed on the 412 and a half.
That's all I have.
I mostly have a question. Overall timeline here. Roughly 4 months. And you wanted to, and we wanted to go ahead and move forward with a, you know, a cautious path, but now we've stretched the end, the finish line, almost 2 years. And so I see this kind of as an acceleration of, you know, costs down the road. Every month you're going to have inflationary pressures, you're going to have wages increases, and pushing it out this far, I can see where we can start having more budgetary requests to add money to the project, as well as, you know, on the back side, you still have staff time. You're adding 2 more years of staff time, a part of the project. You got the city council involved for another couple of years. And it, and all these costs continue to build on themselves. And coming from my projects, you know, every month that goes out, it's been like 2 to 3% additional monies required to complete that project. So is there any way we can shorten this timeline down, get it back into the, we have a finish date that's a little sooner than later?
Thanks for the question, Board Member Dahlgren, and I appreciate you sharing your experience. I'll say that our decision-making process is pretty dynamic on this. If we were to accelerate the time schedule in order to save some project costs, particularly in construction, as they're likely to go up, it could mean that we'd result in a built-out project that came in a few dollars less but is unusable, or a situation where it's not complete. So we would rather take the risk of having the project go up a little bit and but have a usable system. Or conversely, if the tracer studies show that the system isn't going to work, I don't believe that will be the case, but if it does show that, we will be able to go to the state, our funding agency, and give them a demonstration of that. And then just following that to its logical conclusion, we would have a case for not doing parts of the project at all. If we were to simply build the wells where we think they should go right now, we would forego an opportunity to ensure that we have a working system and one that makes sense for the community. And that's really what's driving our decisions about timelines.
I just thought when I first saw the schedule, it's like we've added like almost an additional 24 months to this project. That's quite a bit.
And we think for good reason.
And then when would we actually see like maybe issue for review, you know, complete design package of the project with like a control philosophy? Would that be available for review in the near future?
Yeah, so one of the things that the program team is planning on doing is, you know, in parallel with the drilling the additional wells and doing the injection tests, is completion of the design for, or at least, you know, large portions of the design for the injection well equipping, which is where I think you would see those control strategies and other components. You know, in an effort to streamline the project as much as possible and not let that equipping design become a critical path later down the road, you know, they'll be moving forward with design elements that are, you know, independent of, you know, very specific injection well locations, like control strategies, right? You know, we know we're going to need to be able to control the injection wells, the rates, shut them off, you know, regardless of, you know, if it's located here or 300 that way. And so that work is ongoing. I don't have an updated schedule and specifically like a timeline, you know, when that can happen, but I would say, you know, definitely within 2026 and I probably, you know, the first half, I would think, but we can get the latest schedule for that. Yeah, I'm trying to see if it's on our simplified schedule here for the quarterly report, but I don't think it's called out separately here.
Okay.
If I may add, Chair, I think this is an unusual project in that we're still, in our own way and by choice, doing investigations about what to do next, because we don't want to take risks. We want to know what we're constructing and whether it's going to work. So it's not really just about designing at this point. It's about figuring out where these wells go and if they should go where we want them to go, and if they meet travel time. And that, if we're to do that correctly and right, it's going to take extra time.
I have one question. The drilling of the wells, I don't understand. Could this not have been done before you started the whole project? And how is that determined? What's a good place and what's not?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think it could have been done at the beginning of the project, though there would have been much less information known at that point in time about where to put the wells and, you know, the capacity of the treatment facility and some other things. So it might have been a little bit of getting the cart in front of the horse. But you could have approached it that way. My general understanding of why this component of the project has lagged other components of the WRF project is frankly, it's a factor of the Water Resources Center, construction of a new treatment facility, the conveyance, pump stations, and pipelines to get wastewater there. That had a time schedule order from the Regional Water Quality Control Board that required it to get completed by March of 2023. And thus, that was the primary focus of the city staff and the work program team at that time. And they met that timeline, you know, with the new treatment facility coming online in December of 2022. The recycled water component of the project doesn't have a strict regulatory deadline on it, and it does have some funding and financing deadlines associated with it that we've talked about in the past. But you know, when you're working on a multi-pronged, complex public works project, and you're looking for some float in the schedule, I think, you know, the recycled water component was identified as, well, maybe there's some float there, and we can prioritize our efforts on these other components that do have regulatory deadlines and the potential for significant fines if on a daily or, you know, reoccurring basis the city doesn't meet it.
And for someone who doesn't know really about this whole, what determines a good well or a good spot for a well and what doesn't?
Yeah, that's a complicated question. I mean, the simple answer is beneficial lithology, which is, that's not a simple answer. Simple answer is you want some nice coarse sands and gravels. You know, you don't want is this really fine packed tight clays. You can't push water through clay. You can push water through coarse sands and gravels. And that's what you're looking for largely, is where can I find a good amount of material where sands and gravels have been deposited in the aquifer that I can penetrate with a well, and that's a good spot that I can then push water through the well and out into the formation. You know, that's probably the simplest answer, and it's the same thing for an extraction well. If you want to pull water out, you want to find those, you know, coarse sands and gravel portions of the aquifer, and that's where you're going to find more productive wells. The other somewhat complicating piece of this project, as it's an injection project with recycled water, is you need to find a spot with coarse sands and gravels that's close enough to the extraction wells that it's providing either a recharge or a seawater intrusion prevention or both benefit, but it's not so close that you can't meet your minimum travel times that the Division of Drinking Water establishes for these types of projects. And then, you know, as the advisory board knows, you deal with all the other fun constraints of trying to site public works infrastructure in the coastal zone of California. You've got to avoid your biological resources, your archaeological resources, you know, your land use and other just constraints that you're dealing with in trying to site well.
Thank you.
Robert, do you have any questions? I don't have any further questions. With that, we'll move to public comment. Are there any members of the public who would wish to speak to this item at this time?
It doesn't move anymore. Betty Winholtz, and I will be speaking as myself, not as a member of the Rec and Park Commission. I was interested in this comment, lastly, about the placement of the wells, because it's always bothered me that the wells seem to get closer and closer to the ocean, which would tell me that doesn't provide enough travel time to get what we need. And so and this explanation about the clay versus the sand explains that, but then it begs the point, is there any place in that basin that really is gonna work? Because it's either clay or sand, and the sand may be too close to the ocean. So if that's the issue with all the different places we're trying, do we need to look at a different basin like Choral? Thank you.
AGP, are there any people in the queue? Oh, sorry, comment here.
I just am so excited to use this new micro, this whole new setup. I just emailed staff a question, and as a resident and also a member of the MORF subcommittee and city council, I would love to know, some of your questioning made me think, how close are we to that 412 acre feet number, and with the declining population in Morro Bay, if I just wonder how close we are to that.
AGP, do we have any in the queue at home? No Zoom. That's the only, okay, pardon me. Anybody wish to speak to those?
To the last question from Councilmember Landrum, and I just emailed you back. We know that the 412 and a half acre feet per year is doable based on current flow, based on current population. We don't have a number on, you know, how much we can inject based on current population, but we can get back to you and to the PWAB on that question.
Yeah, and I guess, Greg, if I could just add to that, as somebody who spent a little time with the model looking at that, you can inject more water if you build more injection wells. One of the challenges, you know, the city has a diurnal flow pattern of wastewater, right? So there's lots of wastewater being generated in the day and not a lot of wastewater being generated at night. And so you could, in a sense, sort of overbuild your injection system to be able to inject the maximum amount of wastewater you can treat during the day and then kind of shut it off at night. But that's going to lead to a more expensive project overall, because now you have injection wells that are sitting idle during certain parts of the day or during certain seasons. And so the strategy around trying to minimize the number of wells is really targeting that 412 and a half, and with the available storage and other constraints that the city does have available.
One of the other questions, can we speak to the saltwater intrusion aspects?
Yeah, I think so. So one of the reasons for moving closer to the coast is to help prevent seawater intrusion. So if you look at the historical data for the city's extraction wells, especially back before I think the state water system came online, when the city was really relying upon, you know, Morro and Choro to a lesser extent for its sole water supply, there was elevated TDS and chloride levels at the Morro Basin, the Highway 1, we call them, or Lila Kaiser Park, maybe another term, extraction wells. So, you know, there's evidence that the city overpumps the basin, it will draw in seawater from the ocean. And so one of the benefits of moving closer to the coast is now you're getting in between the ocean and your extraction wells, and so you're creating that seawater intrusion barrier benefit that is intended to help prevent the city from inducing seawater intrusion in the future should it have to be forced to rely more heavily on groundwater than it is today.
And the number of those injection wells would be dependent on testing that's yet to be done. And
yeah, so it, you know, in talking to the hydrogeologists, and they're not wrong, it's like you never know what the well is going to do until you drill the well, you know, and you can do your due diligence, you can do geophysics, you can drill test holes, and that definitely helps inform your injection capacity, but, you know, until you drill that well, you don't actually know what it's going to inject or produce, and so there's a element of uncertainty. You know, as an engineer, I know how much of water a pipe can push, you know, even without having to build it, you know, but with hydrogeology, there's definitely a lot more uncertainty that you're dealing with because, frankly, it's under the ground and you can't see it. And so that's part of the strategy that was recommended to council in June was let's drill two wells. So that was the current thinking. Test those, equip those, and then if that's not sufficient, then a third additional well could be drilled to meet the necessary capacity requirements.
I think that was to Derek's question about, you know, timeline that they've chosen is sort of linear and project, so. Okay, any other comments?
Yeah, since you mentioned the seawater intrusion, according to one of the GSI exhibits, it shows that the old channel comes from the bay, about where the intake building is now. The water rights decision 1633 speaks to that as well. So it seems to me that if you're going to get any seawater intrusion, it's going to come from that direction, not from the ocean. And the other thing, you've passed these slides past real quick. It seems like injection well number 7 has moved to a new location near the creek. Is that true?
Yes. So a couple good, great questions. Yeah, that has been one of the benefits of the geophysics work that I mentioned earlier that's been done, has helped us sort of map some of those historic paleo channels, I think is the term that geologists like to use. You know, where did the creek run historically, not where does it run now? And yeah, so there are sort of two sort of identified paleo channels. One that goes out through the old wastewater plant, the old power plant, the intake structure, and then there's another one that's further north that somewhat parallels Morrill Creek. Currently, it's a little south of that, and they meander a little bit. Yeah, so definitely seawater intrusion coming from the old power plant intake is a concern, and it would be a concern, except, you know, we have injection wells 1 and potentially injection wells 3 that lie in between that, you know, in that paleo channel, in between where the seawater could potentially come and the extraction wells. So sort of the benefit of injection wells 1 and 3, they kind of roughly provide protection from that southern portion of the basin, and then 4 and 5 provide more protection from the western portion. And then 7 and 8 would be, you know, if necessary, providing even further protection from, sorry, lack of a better geographic reference, the sort of northwest portion of the basin. And, oh, yeah, that's quite a bit different. The location for injection well 7 has moved a little bit in some of the planning documents. There was initially a concern that one of the locations was too close to the creek. And so it was looked at other locations a little further north. One of the challenges with moving it further north is there's a 50-foot setback requirement from sewer pipes, sewer laterals, and when you're looking at trying to site an injection well in an RV park, it's probably the most densely populated place you could find for sewer laterals. So, but we were able to identify two spots, or at least two primary spots that would meet those 50-foot setbacks, and those were what were, you know, generally considered for inclusion in potential future phases of the project.
And another slide that went by real quick was about the Willow Camp Creek. As I understand that, when the pipes were put in, we did a horizontal drilling under Willow Camp Creek at the southerly end of the bike path. So what are we talking about here?
Yes, yeah, so there was a jack and bore that was done for the conveyance pipelines under Willow Camp Creek, near where the bike path meets, what we called No Name Road, or, you know, Main Street, roughly. That was done for the conveyance force mains, and then the returning wastewater treated effluent line, and then the RPR pipeline. This would be a separate crossing of Willow Camp Creek, roughly from where injection well 1 is located, under Willow Camp Creek, further downstream over to the fisherman storage area. That would only be necessary for the recycled water transmission line, not any of those other pipelines that were included in that upstream crossing.
more questions. I guess that'll close the issue. Do we have any other future you'd like to add to the schedule?
Yeah, I noticed that you have some items on there for the future. One that has to do with the South Bay Boulevard climate plan, which I guess will be coming to us in October. But an article that just came out a couple of weeks ago in the Starro Bay News about the CSD votes to go out to bids for pipeline design. In other words, they want to tap into our Chore Valley pipeline to take state water. Is that something that we could get a little look at, what's going to go and how that affects Morro Bay? And has the county agreed to sell state water to Los Osos?
Good question. Let me think about that. So CSD is going out to RFP for design services for the pipeline, not for construction. So is the question whether what would the Public Works Advisory Board want to bring on that?
Now, what that might affect us, Morro Bay, and our deliveries of water? Are we going to be out of service for a period of time because they're doing that? And has the county already agreed to sell state water to Los Osos? In other words, it's my understanding, talking to Kate when she was here a couple months ago, that there'd be some sort of reimbursement due to the city, or at least in the form of credits, when they tap into our line, because we've paid for it. And so we should get some credit back over future payments, as I understand it.
My understanding is that we all expect some form of reimbursement through credits, but that hasn't been developed yet. And so the question is, and again, I'd be looking for PWAB consensus here, does the PWAB want to learn more about the impacts of a potential draw from the Chore Valley pipeline to Los Osos, or does the Public Works Advisory Board want to have a closer look at what sort of cost recovery mechanisms are going to be in place for that sale of water, given that the city of Morro Bay largely paid for Chore Valley pipeline? If the question is the second question, we won't have that probably for several months. I suppose we could do the first question sooner. I'd likely invite the county out to talk to the PWAB about that. So is there consensus from the PWAB on looking to see either of those items come forward?
I would appreciate the opportunity to hear from the county and provide cost reimbursement.
I would agree with that. I've asked questions in the past about, you know, what this is.
Excuse me. And just a thumbs up or.
Yeah.
So, and if it's about cost recovery, again, that may take some more time. There's the state water, State Water Subcontractors Advisory Board is working on that issue actively. There may be some interaction with the Board of Supervisors serving as the Board of the District. I'm not sure, Dan, you may know if there's a timeline on that.
I don't think there's a defined timeline. The Board of Supervisors did recently adopt state water policy updates, and you know, one of the goals of those updates was to figure out mechanisms to allow new potential users of state water and evaluate, you know, compensate or you know, making sure that it's fair and equitable to existing state water contractors. But it's going to take a bit of time to work through that.
Ask a question about the capacity of the pipeline developed with the. That's what I recall from a previous presentation. Pipeline has the capacity to water than what the city.
I can say that the county believes there is more capacity than what Morro Bay draws, and that to me is a point for the county to defend. So if that's the question, I'd ask the county to come out here and talk about it.
And in the event that there is any kind of impact to the city's ability to draw water because of construction, the city has resources to draw water, as we do when the state water project is down for service. So I don't think that a construction effort would necessarily impact, or am I wrong in that? A construction project would impact our ability to have water delivery.
Reasonable assumption, but that would, there, we would need to have a whole lot of coordination with all the parties on that. And I mean, we're so far from anything like that. I would imagine years. And I don't know that that would be the topic of the PWAB conversation at this point, because right now it's, again, it just, it's far from now. What I'm hearing is the PWAB is interested in hearing what the cost recovery mechanism would be, as well as whether there's any impacts to Morro Bay. And so that could be one. Another could be, you know, I've heard that there's a concern that we may not be able to have the same capacity. So suffice it to say that we did not agendize this discussion, and now isn't the time for it, but we can bring back something. I just don't know that it will be in the next couple of months. I'd need to learn more from the county where they're at with the process.
I guess what I'm wondering is cost recovery more of a CFAC action item rather than a Public Works Advisory Board function?
I would say Public Works Advisory Board, because it's more about how water is sold. There are, and you know, I don't know if the Public Works Advisory Board wants to be the group to unpack this, but certainly it's going to go in front of the council at some point. And you know, water sale is a very unique thing. It's a very complicated thing with state water, and at some point we will have to come to the city council with a discussion about this. I would think that this is the board to run it through first.
Thank you.
One more question? With that, I think we're adjourned.
Thank you.